Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
Welcome to this week's edition of Says You, this week from the center of Connecticut, whose residents, for some reason, are called nutmeggers.
They would take these little nutmeg balls, smash them, and blow them up their nose. No.
You don't know how close you are.
Oh,
really?
They snorted it.
No,
they snorted nutmeg.
No. Today's show replete with arcane words, both domestic and foreign.
Peppermint schneiden.
Oh.
Peppermint schneiden.
Peppermint schneiden. You know what? 10 points for peppermint schneiden. Also today, nostalgia from our panelists about their previous projects.
I was doing an all-star tribute to the Three Stooges. And I got questions, I got answers from Walter Cronkite. I said, who is your favorite Stooge? And he goes, frankly, I could never tell them apart.
Says You and All That Entails, next.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. In his first Easter Sunday message, the newly elected Pope Francis made a plea for peace in the world's hotspots. The Pope focused on the Middle East, Africa, and the two Koreas, as NPR's Sylvia Pagioli reports.
At the end of the Mass, Francis drove through the crowds in St. Peter's Square on board his open Pope-mobile, shaking hands, kissing babies, and taking a disabled child into his arms. He continued to put his stamp on the Catholic Church with shorter rituals and a direct language. Francis delivered his message to the city and the world from the central balcony of St. Peter's Basilica. He appealed for peace in the Middle East, focusing in particular on Syria, and in Asia on the Korean Peninsula. Francis, the first pope from the developing world and the first Jesuit pope, condemned human trafficking, which he called the most extensive form of slavery in the 21st century, and the iniquitous exploitation of natural resources. Sylvia Poggioli, NPR News, Rome.
Two key laws. Lawmakers say a deal on immigration legislation is close, but they warn the bipartisan group hashing out a proposal has not yet finished its work. Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer of New York and Republican Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona both told NBC's Meet the Press today the so-called Gang of Eight has not yet signed off on the final language. Afghan President Hamid Karzai is visiting the Gulf state of Qatar. Among other issues, the two nations are discussing the stalled peace process with the Taliban, as NPR's Sean Carberry reports.
There have been on-and-off talks of opening an office in Doha for the Taliban for more than a year. The Karzai government initially rejected Qatar as a host for peace talks, but has changed its position in recent months.
We agree for the opening of this office, but of course we have our conditions.
Afghan government spokesman Emil Faizi says the proposed office can't be used for Taliban political activities and is only an address for talks between the Taliban and members of Afghanistan's High Peace Council. However, the Taliban says it does not recognize the Karzai government and will not negotiate with its representatives. Sean Carberry, NPR News, Kabul.
Authorities in Tibet say chances are slim of finding any survivors following a mudslide at a gold mine. The slide Friday buried 83 workers. China's state news agency says searchers have recovered several bodies and are working to find the remaining missing workers. In central Arkansas, crews are making progress cleaning up in the aftermath of an oil pipeline rupture. Randy Holland is the mayor of Mayflower, just outside Little Rock.
We actually have got most of it vacuumed up. Exxon is on the ground. They do have air quality people here that are making sure that is good.
The pipeline operated by ExxonMobil failed Friday afternoon, spilling oil into a neighborhood in Mayflower. ExxonMobil and local officials said in a statement this weekend that more than a dozen vacuum trucks are brought in to aid in the cleanup. This is NPR News. Authorities in North Texas investigating the deaths of a district attorney and his wife. The two were found dead in their home this weekend. The deaths come 2 months after one of the DA's assistant prosecutors was shot to death in a parking lot a block from their office. A spokesman for the Kaufman County Sheriff's Office wouldn't say how the couple died, but the Dallas Morning News is quoting the Kaufman police chief as saying they were shot. Authorities are not saying if all three deaths are linked. We'll soon find out which teams will join Wichita State and Syracuse in the Final Four of the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament. The last two semifinalists will be determined today, as NPR's Mike Pesca reports.
The University of Florida Gators, which pressured their last opponent into 20 turnovers, looked to thwart Michigan, whose Trey Burke scored 23 points in the Wolverines' last game. In that contest, Michigan surmounted an 8-point deficit with a minute 20 left to play. But if Michigan showed that it could pull out a close one, Florida has demonstrated a knack for blowing out opponents. All of their 29 wins this year have been by double digits. All but one of their 7 losses have been by 6 points or fewer. The winner of that game faces Syracuse in the semifinals. In today's other game, Duke and Louisville face each other for the right to play Wichita State. Mike Pesca, NPR News.
French authorities say they arrested a man this weekend for allegedly breaking into Paris's Museum of Natural History and using a chainsaw to cut off a tusk from a centuries-old elephant skeleton. Police say the suspect had the tusk in his possession when he was arrested. The elephant had been a gift to King Louis XIV. I'm Giles Snyder, and this is NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Esurance, an Allstate company, offering Coverage Counselor, an online tool that provides car insurance options based on users' needs at esurance.com.
Welcome to Says You, a game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy.
Support for Says You at St. Joseph College comes from the Noah Webster House and West Hartford Historical Society. On the web at noahwebsterhouse.org. And Merriam-Webster, publishers of Webster's Third International Dictionary. On the web at merriam-webster.com.
Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Schur.
From the Hoffman Auditorium in the Brewitt Athenaeum at St. Joseph College in West Hartford, Connecticut, welcome to Says You, a simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. He's a regular BLT, a big lovable tomato, Tony Khan. Her disapproval could make you croak, monsieur, but her charm could make a tuna melt, Lenore Shannon. And he's had Reuben after Reuben eating hoagies by the handful. He can't count the Monte Cristos, Mr. Barry Nolan. Who will lead this evening?
The big tomato.
The big tomato.
Please. Thank you very much.
We'll be the captain. To my left, team two. I'd have rather spent the last 16 years with him than with the finest people in the world, Arnie Raceman. The last 16 years have been good to her. A standard become a classic. Paula Lyons. And our 16th is made sweeter because we got time to spend with her. Miss Carolyn Faye Fox. Who's going to lead over there?
I will lead.
Miss Sweet.
Carolyn will be the captain. Correct answers are worth 10 points or whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate. We always advise new listeners, grab a pen and paper. Let's begin our 16th season with a round of odd man out. Which of the following does not belong in the list? 5 points for the correct answer, 5 points for telling me why. Carolyn, Eleanor, Martha, Pam.
Pam?
Pam, P-A-M. Susan, and Michelle.
Oh.
Now, does this have to do with songs?
Oh, yeah.
It does.
All right. This is Beatles.
Yeah, there is no Pam song.
Boy, I thought that was going to take some time, but I guess I was wrong.
I know. I got it. Eleanor Rigby. I started singing it when
Rigby,
you said her
Martha,
name.
My
really?
Dear.
Martha, my dear. Michelle, my bell.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm so sorry. You said Pam.
Yeah, it's Susan.
It is Susan.
Yeah.
All right, Susan.
Why? What's the song about Pam?
Pam, 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 Pam,
Pam. Polythene Pam.
Polythene Pam, right? Yeah.
What?
Polythene
Pam.
Oh, gosh.
I thought you were going up. I mean, you said she was right. I shut up.
Yeah. Well, that's getting off to a good start, don't you think?
Yeah.
And you never went to Eleanor Roosevelt and Martha Washington?
Of course I did.
Yeah, okay, yeah. All right. Yeah.
But they weren't home.
Yeah. There is no Beatles song about Susan. That's how that goes.
That's right.
All right, try this one. What's the odd one out, Tony?
Okay.
The Melancholy Dane.
Melancholy Dane. Yeah.
The Great Bambino.
Great Bambino. Mm-hmm.
Glynis Johns.
Glynis Johns.
And Leo G. Carroll.
Leo G. Carroll. Well, let's see.
The Melancholy Dane, The Great Bambino, Glynis Johns.
The Melancholy Dane, Hamlet.
It is, in fact.
Glynis Johns was the Bride of Frankenstein. I don't know if she was...
No, I don't think she was the Bride of Frankenstein.
I don't think so.
Wasn't that Elsa Lancaster?
Is this, Elsa Lancaster.
People right. known by one name?
No, it is not.
Topper? Oh, he was connected. Leo Carroll was in Topper.
Glynis Johns.
That's right.
Ghosts, of course, Ghosts, the Melancholy
Dane. Oh, Ghosts!
Ghosts, Topper's Ghosts, Glynis Johns was the Cabinet of Caligari.
What role did she play in that, Glynis Johns?
So,
Housekeeper?
The Great Bambino is the odd person.
The Great Bambino is, in fact, the odd one out, because, again... He did not co-star with a ghost. That's exactly right. Very good. The Melancholy Dane, Hamlet, saw the ghost. Glynis Johns
she was in a movie version of the Cabinet of Count Caligari. It was sometime in the 60s, and she was seeing things all over the place. She played the one who was insane without knowing it, and I'm sure there was a ghost.
There you go. There you go. All right. Arnie, all I can say is, you know how I often say, this is the worst question I have ever asked in the history of this show?
Mm-hmm.
This is the worst question I have ever asked in the history of this show.
Okay.
What's the odd one out?
All of them.
Lassie.
Okay.
Bullet. Mm-hmm. Old Yeller. Mm-hmm. And Homer. H-O-M-E-R.
Homer Simpson?
No, I will give you the hint that Homer was the mascot of the 1960s Mets.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay, so all four are dogs.
They are.
Was Bullet Roy Rogers' dog? Who was Bullet?
Yeah. Bullet was Roy Rogers' dog.
Right.
And Lassie, Old Yeller, Bullet, and Homer.
Right. The fact that Homer was not in a movie, that doesn't count either,
no.
right?
Yeah, does not count. If he gets this, I will not believe it.
Are we talking about the owners?
Oh, my goodness. Okay. In a way, yes.
Okay. All right. Roy Rogers, Timmy.
No.
Timmy was
not
Lassie's
the,
owner.
No, not the, no. Not the fictional owners.
The
no.
real owners.
I don't know who owned the real Lassie, do you? I mean, he tells you that this is the 1960s Mets mascot. That seems like a guy who doesn't belong in the category right there.
No.
Given that Lassie, Bullet, and Old Yeller were either TV or movie stars.
Well, I'm going to give you a big hint because this is just so nasty. Hmm. Have any idea who trained any of these dogs?
No.
Not really. No.
No, yes. Not a bit.
A
was
dog
that,
trainer.
Was that a hiss from the audience? Was that?
Yeah.
I think I got
go
a
ahead.
Hiss.
I mean, you got any tomatoes?
Does anyone up here know?
Something Merriweather or Buzz something.
Lightyear.
Peanut butter. It was a very unusual
Will
name.
Will the hisser please shout it out?
Rudd
Weatherwax.
Weatherwax.
Rudd Weatherwax.
I just like to say.
That's pretty impressive. Have that person stand up.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Weatherwax. We appreciate that.
So he trained all of them but Old Yeller.
He trained all of them but Bullet. He
but
trained
Bullet.
All of them but Bullet. A very unfair and difficult question. God. Give him 6 points for the struggle and the effort.
For coming.
The only one who was not trained by Rudd Weatherwax
was Bullet.
Bullet. And I hope I get tons of hatred mail for that.
I think
you will.
It's a matter of record, Richard. They also all slept with Louis B. Mayer.
Which would have made it a four-dog night. But no...
Indeed.
Try this one, Lenore. What's the odd one out? William, Arthur, Philip, Jeffrey with a G, Lewis. L-O-U-I-S.
L-O-U-I-S.
William, Arthur, Philip, Jeffrey, and Louis.
Well, are they all the middle names of Prince Charles?
Because they're all kings.
Oh. Not Prince Charles.
They have all been princes.
No, not no. Prince Charles.
William Henry Charles. So the odd one out is...
The Duke of Windsor?
Prince William?
It is Prince William.
She didn't say which was the odd one out.
But wait a minute.
Oh, wait a minute. Yes, that's right. It is...
Are you doing this program or what?
The summer hiatus is too much for
all
him.
All I can tell you is it's the first show of the season.
Yeah,
Just getting into the flow.
Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't have started with an odd man out. Who knows? But we're going to go.
So the odd man out
so
is...
Much for
well, wait a minute.
16.
Who is it first? It's
Prince William.
I'm going to go with Louis because it's French.
It is not Louis. It is not Louis.
Philip is his grandfather's name, so it seems likely that Philip would be in there.
Yeah.
I don't know who on earth Jeffrey is, but...
So it's either Arthur or Jeffrey. So
well,
you
he
have...
said Jeffrey with a G. Now, was that significant? Did he want to make
might
sure
have been.
That...
Arthur. Go with Arthur.
But I might be wrong, but I'm going to do what Barry says. Go with Arthur.
It is not Arthur! No, I'm sorry!
It's Jeffrey?
It's Jeffrey.
Well, then why did you make a point of saying it's with
that's
a G?
That's probably why.
To throw you off.
Trying to throw us off the...
It is Jeffrey. All but Jeffrey are parts of Prince William's name. William, Arthur, Philip, Louis. I wanted to ask this. Is he William, Philip, William, Arthur, Philip, Louis, Mountbatten or Windsor?
Yeah.
Windsor.
But
Windsor.
But isn't his father a Mountbatten?
No,
his father doesn't count.
Different family.
I understand his father doesn't count. Let's put it this way. He's taken the SATs.
Yes.
What does he write on the top line?
The name of the person sitting next to him.
Okay.
Who was ahead of him in school?
Right.
Okay. I'd like help from the radio audience. Why isn't he a Mountbatten? You know, I know he's a Windsor, but why isn't he a Mountbatten? I don't get that. All right, try this one, Paula. What's the odd one out? End. E-N-D. Rope.
With a P?
With a P.
With a P?
Rope.
As opposed to?
I thought it could have been something else, like rote.
Oh, rope. Rope.
With a P.
No,
okay.
Rope. R-O-P-E. Nose.
Nose.
With a K-N or a plain N?
No.
With a broken N or with a...
That's N-O-S-E.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And lip. L-I-P. End, rope, nose, and lip.
Are these all words that go with other words?
Yes, I think that's probably what it is.
Like at the end of your rope?
Yeah. End of your nose?
At the end of your lip?
End of your end?
That's end of your end.
But it's not right.
Endless, ropeless,
rope,
noseless.
Oh, no.
What? What?
Yes.
It's yours.
It's mine? Well, I'm not getting anywhere, am I? So chime in.
Can I say nose?
Nose is the odd one out.
Because everything else is tight?
That's exactly right. Very good, Anna. Very good.
Very good. That's what we were looking for.
Yeah, okay.
A tight end, a tight rope, a tight lip, but no tight nose that I could find.
I think we just created one.
Yeah, I'm sure that there'll be... You know,
if you weren't so tight-nosed, we could...
I could wear more cologne.
I could...
And finally, Barry... What is the odd man out? An exposed navel.
Okay.
A plunging neckline.
Uh-huh.
A sharp intake of breath and a pelvic thrust.
Mickey Spoy.
What is the odd man out? An exposed navel. A plunging neckline. A sharp intake of breath and a pelvic thrust.
Is it Elvis? Like?
Well, Elvis. It's Elvis related.
Elvis certainly. Related.
So sharp intake of breath. He didn't.
Elvis engaged. He did have a plunging neckline in some of those outfits.
Yeah. No, I think you want to think of icons.
Yes. That,
icons. Right. Oh, okay. There are icons.
Okay.
You have it, Paula?
Well, I can think of someone who. Fascinated me when he did that.
I think sharp intake of breath. I don't think there was any of them associated with sharp intake.
Sharp intake of breath is, in fact, the odd man out.
Right.
That's 5 points. Now, can you tell me
is Elvis Presley plunging neckline Marilyn Monroe, or what's her name, the one who's married to the guy who flew the whatever?
Yeah.
The one who was married to the guy.
understand what Chinese is.
I think your name was Taylor, but I'm not sure.
Who was used to be the world's Howard Hughes.
Howard Hughes.
Right. Married to Howard Hughes. Jane Russell.
Jane Russell.
The full-figured guy.
Is right,
Jane
yes.
Jane Russell.
Exposed navel. Well, Yul Brynner looked like an exposed
Britney Spears.
Yes, Britney Spears.
No.
Can you help Mother's Side?
I think it's Harry Belafonte.
No.
I think it's Barbara Eden.
It is exactly Barbara Eden.
Oh,
in this case, it's Barbara Eden. But why would those three be grouped together? An exposed navel, a plunging neckline, and a pelvic thrust.
Those were things that were forbidden by the TV censors for the I Dream of Jeannie character to have.
Audience, what do you think it is?
Why are they together?
They were together.
It's censored is
they
exactly
censored.
Right.
Yeah.
Isn't that the word I...
An exposed navel was Barbara Eden's navel in I Dream of Jeannie. The plunging neckline, of course, Jane Russell's décolletage. And the pelvic thrust is Elvis's emphasis.
Elvis.
Yeah. And Elvis's emphasis. All three were deemed indecent, and they were all censored. So that's what it is, and the odd one out is a sharp intake of breath. 8 points for you, Tony. So very good. Nice job on that, you guys. That's a good way to break in the year. Let's go on to round two, which is played with a little musical help from our friends at the International String Trio. It's the first of the Says You Bluffing rounds. Carolyn, each of you will receive a card defining a word. Only one has the actual definition. The others have cards that say, please bluff. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot good enough to fool Tony's team. 10 points are up for grabs to Tony if he can find the bluffer, or to you, Carolyn, if he can't. A few seconds to come up with a definition for the word flob. F-L-O-B. Flob. Gentlemen?
Left the gang, they were making plans to go to Stowe, Vermont, Saturday, April 20th, to the Spruce Peak Performing Arts Center for a live performance of the show. But even as that show nears capacity, a second performance has taken wing, Sunday, April 21st, at the Bellows Falls Opera House in Bellows Falls, Vermont. Tickets, information, and details for both performances are available at saysyou.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. Where if you follow that Join the Fun link, we'll show you how to join the fun. So should late April find you amid Green Mountains, join the gang for a live performance. That's Saturday, April 20th at the Spruce Peak Arts Center in Stowe, or Sunday, April 21st at the Bellows Falls Opera House. Two cheesy interludes with Says You. Says You returns after this from home.
an update to our listeners in Washington State. First, Says You says thanks to all of Seattle for selling out our June shows at Town Hall. And now, we're announcing a third performance, a Community Says You, Friday night, June 21st, in Port Townsend, to benefit the Clemente Course for the Humanities. We hope you'll turn out as local players and Says You team captains join together to support the program. Tickets, information, and details are available at SaysYou.net. So remember, that's Friday, June 21st in Port Townsend, Washington. A Community Says You.
That is the International String Trio. Waking them up out there. That's Ippe Ichimaru on the bass, Jacob Trasik on the violin, and Slava Tolstoy on guitar. Thanks very much, you guys. We have had a little time with the word flob. We will go first to Carolyn Fay Fox.
Flob. I don't know how many of you have seen, there was a video on YouTube of a young woman texting while she walked through a mall, and she was so distracted that she texted herself right into a fountain, stumbled and fell right into it. And so she was a bit of a flobber, because to flob is to inadvertently run into a wall or door or fountain.
To inadvertently, as opposed to deliberately walking into it.
Yes.
I'm going to challenge that wall.
That could be it. Sounds reasonable. What say you, Mr. Reisman?
It's an acronym for the Home of Retired Clowns. It's the Florida League of Bozos. No.
No. Just.
Flob. To flop. Excuse me. To call attention to yourself at a time when you wish you didn't. Or, to be more precise, to interrupt or disturb a conversation or activity in an embarrassing fashion.
To interrupt a conversation, to butt in, and just embarrass yourself.
Yeah.
Well, that could be it, too. Or it could be something else. Paula?
Well, it's actually a noun. A flob. And a flob is a fish that must be thrown back into the water because it does not comply with current regulations.
They
That's a flob.
Flobber, flobber.
The fish you have to throw back, too small, too pink, too whatever, right. You got to throw them
too
back.
Too laden with eggs. Right.
That's the flob.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know something? They all sound reasonable, don't they?
Yeah.
Absolutely. You've either got a fish you got to throw back, to interrupt someone and embarrass yourself, or to inadvertently run into a wall. It is one of those three, and the choice, Tony, is yours.
Boy, I have done the first two repeatedly, and I have never heard the term used toward me. Throwing back a fish, could it be an acronym for fish light on blubber? Guys, bring your life experience.
Well, I don't know.
If
you look
now.
At, you might say fish lob, and maybe that's where Paula thought of it.
Yeah, right. It's true.
I
lobbing.
See,
I have to think, though, Richard comes up with these, so I always have to go back to Richard. And Richard, since I've known him, has always butted in and embarrassed himself in various situations. And so I have to think he speaks from personal experience,
Richard,
and he chose that.
I think that's the correct
Should we go with that
one?
Number two. We're going to go for flob, call attention.
I've heard a lot of fishermen use a lot of four-letter words about
that ain't
catch,
one of
but
them.
Flob was not one of them.
So you're all going to go, and you're unanimous on this.
Yeah.
You're going to say...
Number two, call attention.
To interrupt and embarrass yourself. Well, Arnie, that was your definition.
I've been flobbing all morning.
Yeah, that's right. Is that, in fact, what flob means?
To flob. To fake a definition.
Oh. That is a fake definition.
Very good.
All right.
Very good.
10 points for your team. All right, audience. You got a 50-50 shot. What do you think?
Yeah.
Carolyn, I think that the audience goes with inadvertently walking into a wall. Is that, in fact, what flob means?
Flob, to inadvertently run into a wall or door.
There you go. 10 points for the audience. Good job, you guys. Let's go on to round three. We are in the middle of the great state of Connecticut.
and we feel it's time for a little nutmeg nuance.
Oh, geez.
Please answer the following questions about Connecticut. Carolyn,
I didn't do my homework.
Why is it pronounced that way anyway?
Why
is it spelled that way? Let's start with
that's another thing, but we'll get to that later.
Okay.
Carolyn, people from Connecticut are called nutmeggers. Mm-hmm. Why?
Because they like to have a little spice in their lives.
Well, you would think. You would think, but that's not
it. They consume an inordinate amount of eggnog.
Do you? We got a mixed response on that, I say.
I think that answers your question for you.
Yeah. Nutmeggers. It's the nutmeg state, right? The Constitution state.
Yes. There must be nutmeg in this state.
Well, there is nutmeg in this state, but why would...
And obviously more nutmeg than there is allspice or mace.
Just a little.
My favorite trio.
I have to say, this is a derogatory term.
Really?
Just as Yankee was a derogatory term to the British, and we adopted it...
So nutmeggers, it's a bad thing to call someone.
Yes, it is.
I think the term meathead has been taken.
It was a derogatory term used by the British?
Because a nutmegger was a person who made his living in a certain way?
Yes.
All right.
Smuggling.
You're getting there. You're getting very close.
Pirateering?
It wasn't smuggling so much.
Gun running?
Keeping fish that should have been thrown away.
I think it was stealing eggnog.
Right. They would take these little nutmeg balls, smash them, and blow them up their nose. No.
You don't know how close you are.
Oh, really?
They snorted it.
They snorted nutmeg.
No. You know what? I'm going to give you 7 points because that will effectively put an end to this.
Yes. Right. Okay.
Any thoughts on the other side?
You said that it had something to do with smuggling, pirating?
Well, in a way. Yeah. Connecticut purveyors would counterfeit nutmeg. Is that right? They would take wood shavings and shave off wood and sell it as nutmeg. Is this correct?
Yeah. Wow.
And
wood
shavings. And you're proud of this.
Yeah. And who would use it thinking it was nutmeg?
The British.
Hamsters.
Hamsters, right.
Tastes like nutmeg to me.
Right. Yeah. Evidently people who didn't buy twice from the same guy, I would imagine.
It was the Colonial Oat brand.
But evidently this state is lousy with nutmeg counterfeiters because that's where it came from. They would counterfeit nutmeg, and that's why they were called nutmeggers. So thank you, Connecticut, for helping me out with that. Try this one, Tony. The Scoville Memorial Library is the oldest public library in the U.S. Mm-hmm. In 1771, they instituted a system of payment for damage to the books. Most damage in those days was due to greasing.
Greasing.
What was greasing?
Greasing was using a piece of nutmeg as a page indicator.
No, that's not it.
Greasing a book. Why would you want to grease a book?
In 1771.
Okay. Was it somewhat inadvertently?
Yeah, willful damage? Or did it just happen?
It happened. It just
using
happened.
Using books to prop up a carriage so that it wouldn't roll backwards across the treacherous.
A lot of people don't know this. It is possible to lose points in this game.
They read books by the firelight, and the fire was made of a greasy, or a greasy thing, and it spattered on the books. And
sorry,
she's exactly right. 10 points, Leroy. Very good. That's exactly right.
I think, Richard, I think the very first cookbook was mislabeled Cook This Book.
Don't think so. No. Greasing, wax dripped from the candles by which the patrons read all over the book, that was called greasing. And it damaged the books. It was a big problem.
What was the penalty?
A fine.
Just a fine.
Yeah, you paid a fine.
You didn't get shot.
Try this one, Arnie. Many colonial New Haven children were often referred to as pumpkin heads. Why?
It's that red weather wax again.
It's not red weather.
Were they redheaded?
Good guess.
There was a plethora of gourds in town. I mean, is this...
Was that the principal crop of the region then, or what?
It's not the principal crop of the region. No, this really had to do with pumpkins, and it had to do with heads.
They wore pumpkins on their heads.
Yes, they did.
They
Why?
Did.
Because it looked so good.
No. Right.
to so stay
can,
warm.
Right, so they can sneak into Yale.
I just want to say they didn't actually wear the. They put the pumpkins
put the pumpkin on
their heads.
Head.
They didn't really wear them.
For their posture.
Right.
It also had to do with their hair. I'm giving them lots of hints here.
It had to do with their hair.
Pumpkin, it
I
colored their hair?
The other side knows, I'm pretty sure. I don't know.
She just has to go to the bathroom.
Oh, okay.
Did it have anything to do with, like, hair, dyeing your hair that color?
Not dyeing it, no.
Did it condition
not
hair?
Not dyeing.
Bleaching it.
Bleaching it.
No, I'm going to have to
clean their
it.
Hair?
Cleaning
waxing
your hair.
It.
Shampooing your hair with pumpkin
they
seeds.
They cut their hair using
they
it as a guide.
Cut their hair with pumpkin
they finally got
like
there.
Like the
they,
bowl. Like the bowl.
Right.
Before
exactly.
there were bowls,
put the pumpkin,
pumpkin
over your head and cut what wasn't pumpkin.
That's
pumpkin exactly
cut.
Right.
Right.
A pumpkin.
And then
pumpkin.
They got into Yale.
And then,
yes.
Cut pumpkins were used as guides for haircuts to ensure a round uniform style. Because of these fashion, these New Englanders were named pumpkin heads. How many points do I give them for that
boy,
disgraceful
is that obscure.
Exhibition?
When was the bowl invented? I don't know. I haven't got one. Use that pumpkin over there.
I think I'll give them 4 points, and I think you should be grateful for that.
No.
No? 4 points. We'll give you 4 points for that, and hopefully that'll work out.
Okay, let's eat.
Try this one, Lenore. From January 17th, 1920, to December 5th, 1933, it can truly be said of Connecticut there wasn't a dry eye in the house. Why?
Yes.
From what is the first date? 1920?
January 17th, 1920.
That was prohibition.
It was?
They didn't pass prohibition when everybody
right.
else did.
That's exactly right. 10 points. Very good.
They were slow.
They weren't slow. They never passed it.
Oh,
they
okay.
never ran. So let me get this straight.
Straight.
First you counterfeit nutmeg.
Yeah.
And then you don't pass prohibition.
That and would explain the pumpkins on children's heads.
Clearly.
This is what you get when you digest too much cellulose.
Yes. Anything else we should know? Okay. Try this one, Paula. Research shows that the term lollipop has been around for centuries. But when George Smith began producing them in New Haven in 1908, he got the credit for the invention of the lollipop. Why?
Well, apparently this candy became so enormously popular and traveled well beyond Connecticut that he got the credit. I mean, I've heard lollipops, the term lollipop, used for little lobster claws, too. So.
Oh, is that right?
Oh,
I didn't
yeah.
know that.
But
it goes way back. The term lollipop goes way back. It goes into the 1500s.
But it wasn't originally candy.
I'm sorry?
It was not originally candy.
Some of them were. Lollies were candy.
Yeah.
Okay. He put the name lollipop on the wrapper.
Well, that would be a good step forward, but that's not quite it.
He trademarked it. He patented it.
You're getting there.
He copyrighted it.
No.
He took out billboards.
He advertised them as lollipops.
He changed his name to Lollipop.
You would think he would.
They yeah. wrote a song about lollipop. They
no,
call my thought... baby lollipop.
Oh.
No.
Something to do with the stick?
That's exactly right.
He put them on a stick.
He put them on a stick.
Hey.
So that you could eat them anywhere.
They weren't originally on sticks.
And that was the trademark he got. That was how that
that's
worked.
How we
and
did.
That's what made lollipops eatable almost anywhere.
Yes, as opposed to having
much
it in your hand.
Messy, right.
Right.
But, what did we get for that, Richard?
I don't know. That was about,
no,
what, the
either.
13th, 14th guest. Give him another 5 points for that.
Oh.
He eventually got there.
No, we were
there. But it was about the 12th guest. So we'll, and this last one is very, very difficult.
Six
but
times.
We'll give you a lot of hints on this, Barry. Pez candy. Mm-hmm. I'm
yeah.
sure you're familiar with Pez.
Yes.
Is made in the city of Orange, Connecticut. How did Pez get its name?
Ooh.
How did Pez
yeah.
come to be called Pez?
Is it somebody's name, a nickname?
It is not.
It is short for something?
It's
in a way. It is short for something.
Yeah,
Mr. President.
Yeah.
So...
Does it mean please? Is it a little kid saying please?
No. Is there a Latin root?
Not Latin.
Pez has a root in another language.
It does.
And it means little pellet.
Well, it doesn't mean little pellet, but, you know, if you get the language, you might have a shot at this.
So Pez sounds like it could be Spanish.
Spanish?
It is not.
No, because...
But it just sounds like it could be Spanish.
Then it would be Pez.
Yeah.
Pez.
It would... It's French.
It is not French. No,
it's German.
It is German.
It's German.
So it stands for push or pull or...
Oh, no.
Press...
It stands for what it was originally.
Peppermint. Petzerminteschneiden. Petzerschneiden is a peppermint.
Peppermintuschneiden. You know what? 10 points for peppermintuschneiden.
Peppermintuschneiden. 10 points, Richard?
I'm sorry I got carried away, but...
We got our 5 points and faster than they got.
I know. It is Pfeffermans.
Pfeffermans.
Is the German for peppermint.
Yeah.
And the first, third, the first, middle, and last letters of which spell
P-E-Z.
Pez. P-E-Z. Yeah. Pfeffermans, because they were originally peppermints.
We got the points.
We got the points. Don't
complain.
Don't complain.
How can they get 10 points?
Let's go on to round 4, which is Tony's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word. Two will bluff. 10 points, Carolyn. If your team can find the rose among thorns, take a few moments to create a definition for the word ooch.
Ooch.
O-O-C-H. Ooch. Gentlemen? We are the guests this week of St. Joseph College, the Noah Webster House at Merriam-Webster. Thanks again, folks, for your long support. And Says You says thanks to the Greater Hartford Arts Council, which supports more than 150 art and heritage organizations in Greater Hartford alone. On the web at letsgoarts.com. Thanks also to the First Niagara Bank for its support of the arts in the community, and for supporting Says You, West Hartford. Briefly, Says You pauses. We'll be right back. A quick reminder, Says You stops in Stowe, Vermont, Saturday, April 20th, for a live performance at the Spruce Peak Performing Arts Center. Then on Sunday, April 21st, it's a matinee at the Bellows Falls Opera House in Bellows Falls, Vermont. In June, we're off to Port Townsend, Washington, for our final stop of the season, a community Says You. And if you'd like tickets, information, or details, all can be found at saysyou.net. That is the International String Trio. Thank you, guys. Boy, that's the hardest working band in show business, don't you think? Thank you very much, you guys. Let's take a moment and thank our scorekeepers. That is Peter Sokolowski, the editor-at-large at Merriam-Webster, and to his left, Says You's own Mr. Benjamin Scherr. Thank you, guys, for keeping the score. We have had a few moments with the word ooch. We will go first to a pensive Tony Khan.
Well, I'm pensive because I'm really out of my field of expertise here. Although I love languages, I think this comes from the early Neanderthal, which, as far as I can tell, really the only thing they really talked about was getting a mate. And I know that in early Neanderthal, oog meant hello.
Yeah.
Booga booga meant I think you're pretty.
Yeah.
Bonk meant you're mine, usually accompanied by a blow to the head.
Yeah.
And ooch meant to trip a booga booga so that you could get her bonked. So ooch means to trip.
Here we go.
To trip.
Yes.
To ooch is to trip.
That was a long trip around the cave.
Yeah, that was. Okay, well, that's possible. Lenore, what say you?
Well, ooch is actually sort of a derivation of inch in a strange way. And let me tell you a little story. I had a boss one time, an ancient boss when I was selling television, and he had been a salesperson forever, and he always insisted on driving every place we went. But he drove like this. Gas forward, foot off the gas, and you'd feel really rather ill by the time you got to the sales appointment. So he was a practitioner of ooching, which is to make yourself try to propel yourself forward and then stop, thinking the thing you're in is going to advance with your own body. Like,
what?
So, do you know how like a little kid in a toy car or in a boat would try to push themselves forward to make the thing go?
Yes, but if it were on the card, what would it say?
You don't have to tell him that.
Well, I will tell you. It says to try to propel yourself forward using, those motions to make something go using your body.
To make something go using your body.
Yes. Abrupt movements of your body.
Abrupt movements.
To ooch ahead.
Abrupt movements of
your
body.
You ooch your head. It's the way Irving Schmuger drove, I'm telling you.
To make something go faster by moving your body forward and then kind of jerking back and just moving it.
Sort of like inch.
Ooching forward,
yeah.
Okay? That's possible. Or something else. Barry, what say you?
Ooch is a desert-dwelling breed of dogs with no pee.
Okay.
Takes a minute.
Yeah.
No, actually.
No, actually.
Ooch is are trinkets used as bribes.
Trinkets used as bribes.
Trinkets used as bribes.
I thought that was hooch.
That was give him some ooch.
Right, give him some ooch and
we'll get the nutmegs for a better price.
That's, there you go. Trinkets used as bribes are ooch, could be. Could be to lurch forward and then stop to get something moving, or to trip. It's one of those three, and the choice, Carolyn, is yours.
I thought ooch would be a painful kiss. But apparently it's one of those three definitions. I'm wondering if Lenore, with all her obfuscation, actually had the correct definition.
Which was what?
To inch forward
In fits and starts, which she never said, but is probably someone. That's true.
I have a feeling that it was Tony's obfuscation that might be more relevant. Could be as simple as...
I can't remember what the definition
to trip.
Oh, to trip.
I think, Carolyn, you may have to exercise your leadership here.
Yeah, I think
you
may have to.
All right, we will ooch forward. I choose Lenore.
Okay.
Lenore, they think that to ooch...
But I'm probably wrong.
Lenore, they're probably wrong, but they think that ooching is to lurch forward and stop yourself to propel yourself forward.
All I can say is Carolyn's going to have one heck of a ride home.
Why is that?
Because ooch is to try to propel a sailboat by moving one's body forward and then abruptly stop.
Okay,
there you go.
Right.
10 points.
Very good. Good intuition. Excellent.
Nice job, Carolyn.
Good job.
Nice job, Lenore.
Let's close tonight. How about a round of AKA? I'll give you a name for 10 points. Please tell me another name by which that person is known. An example, if I gave you McKinley Morganfield, you would say...
Rudd Weatherwax.
No,
Muddy Waters. Muddy Waters.
Muddy Waters is exactly right. Carolyn, Agnes, and I hope I do this right, Agnes Boyajou, B-O-J-A-X-H-I-U, Agnes Boyajou.
Agnes Boyajou? Agnes DeMille?
No.
Coco Agnes Chanel.
Boyajou, Coco Chanel.
Yeah, Boyajou.
Okay.
B-O-J-A-X-H-I-U.
X?
Don't say it out loud. Does anyone in the audience
Catherine
know?
Catherine Deneuve. What?
Raise your hand
Let's
if you know.
Let's just guess at this point.
No? Okay, this was harder than I thought.
This is harder than I thought.
You take that to be a French name? Or you don't know?
I don't know if it's French or it seems like it might be...
I-U.
It's
I-U.
Is that an Albanian name?
Joan of Arc's real name.
No, it is not Joan of Arc, but I'll tell you something. It's in that league.
Is it Marie Antoinette?
No, I don't think they're going to get it. Anyone want to try a shot in the audience?
Mata Hari.
Mother Teresa.
Mother Teresa.
That is Albanian. Right.
Very good.
That's exactly right.
Very good.
Nicely done, audience.
Wow, we'd have been here a while.
Teresa is much easier to spell. No wonder she changed it.
Yeah, Agnes Boyajou is Mother Teresa.
Wow.
Was she Albanian?
Yeah. She was.
She was Albanian.
Albanian.
Yeah.
Wow.
Try this one, Tony. Yeah. Gertrude Zell. I believe that's how it's pronounced. Or Zella. G-E-R-T-R-U-D. Z-E-L-L-E. Gertrude Zella.
Harpo Marx.
Greta Garbo.
No, it is not. Gertrude Zella.
Zella. Could you give me a hint like her first name?
Well, the first thing I'd do is, try to figure out maybe where...
Well,
something
Greta?
In the clue? That's what I said. Something in the clue.
No, just where she might have come from.
Well, from Germany?
I think does the other side know? Don't
yeah, know. We're making guesses over here.
Okay. How about what's her name? In the Blue Angel, not Marlene Dietrich.
No.
Did Gertrude have sisters?
She may have. I don't know. But I think I'm going to go to the other
Did
side.
She wear a lot of bling.
We're thinking of Hedy Lamarr.
It is not Hedy Lamarr. Oh. This is a much tougher category than
Paula
I thought.
Paula Negri.
No, give it a shot, audience.
We saw Garbo.
Mata Hari.
Mata Hari.
Mata Hari.
Oh, that's why you said
Mata Hari. Gertrude Zell, okay.
Yeah, me too.
Much harder than I thought. Well, we'll keep trying here. Arnie, Anna Sage.
Anna.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
Yes,
Anna
I knew it would.
Sage.
Anna Sage. This is Depression era.
Depression era. Anna Sage.
Texas Guinan?
No.
Oh.
Is it a photographer?
It is not. Oh.
Is it an entertainer?
No, well, no, not really.
Not really.
Not really.
Well, she was in a way, but we'll discuss that later.
Oh, really?
I don't think they're going to get it.
Oh, are we thinking of
an evangelist?
Depression era? No. Yeah. Doesn't help.
Gypsy Rose Lee? No.
Not a gangster.
Any help from the others? Well,
a gangster? Bonnie of Bonnie and Clyde?
No.
But
The Woman in Red?
The Woman in Red.
Yes.
It's exactly right.
For Dillinger.
That's right. The Woman in Red.
Well, we got to get something.
Is Anna Sage. He did get that. Give him 7 points for that. I like that. That was a good answer. Nice job.
Really.
All right. Lenore, Jerome Howard.
That's Curly.
Oh, for goodness sake.
It's Curly, all right. I'm so sorry. That is Curly.
Mo Larry the Cheese,
for those of you who remember Mo Larry the Cheese.
It's why Richard and I are friends. The Three Stooges. Because he couldn't believe that he met a woman who liked the Three Stooges. And
neither can I.
Pick two.
Is that really true? Women do not like the Three Stooges and men do? That's a given?
That's
not a stereotype.
Except not this woman.
I asked
Helen Gurley Brown that question one time.
He did.
And I was doing an all-star tribute to the Three Stooges. And I got questions, I got answers from Walter Cronkite. I said, who is your favorite Stooge? And he goes, frankly, I could never tell them apart. That's the truth. But I asked Helen Gurley Brown, and I said that exact question, why is it that men find the Three Stooges funny and women don't? And she was offended.
I
think women can find
I don't think
that
women
humor just
see...
as funny as men. And I thought, you're not helping women here.
Barry, women don't see the irony.
Irony?
Yeah, the irony, right. It's the irony is the missing element. That's...
And they don't get the nuance.
The nuance. Right. Nuance is another thing. Oh, see, the little deer has the deer a little toe.
Yeah, Chewbox.
Yeah, you know.
Listen, would you give me Archie Leach?
No.
That would be helpful.
No, I'm going to give you something better. Paula, how might we know Sidney Biddle Barrows?
Angier Biddle Duke? I don't know.
Oh, the Sidney
Mayflower
Madam.
The Madam, the Mayflower Madam. That's right.
That is exactly right. Yeah. The Mayflower Madam. And finally, Barry, how might we know Nadja Suleiman?
Oh,
jeez.
Nadya Suleiman. Nadja Suleiman.
Oh, she is the mother of all children. The octomom.
That's exactly right. That's 10 points. That is a real good close. A real good day. Oh, wow, look at that. That's a real good close, a real good day. 75 points, but not enough. Winners this week, 79 points. Carolyn Fay, Fox's T.
Hey.
Congratulations. That is all we have time for this week. I want to thank Chris Dobbs and all the folks at the Noah Webster House for making our trip so much fun, and to Dr. Bob Smith, Howard Kirzner, Laura Falker, and all the folks here at St. Joseph College for being such gracious hosts. Sure and Salkind often right. Antonio Oliart captures the moment, and Zach Moore is just back from Scotland, and we missed them all terribly. Our closing thought on this occasion, when we started all of this 16 years ago, our associate producer was 5 years old, our scorekeeper was still just a dream, and our investments were oddly profitable. In fact, the only thing that hasn't changed since then is that this is still our favorite thing to do. Thanks for everything, guys, and thank you, Hartford, for showing up. We'll see you next week.
This week, Says You enjoyed the hospitality of St. Joseph College in West Hartford. Liberal arts education in a culture of achievement and collaboration. On the web at sjc.edu.
Benjamin, give him the skinny.
Says You. Created and produced by Pippin and Finch. Boston.
Support for WPLN comes from the Adventure Science Center, where visitors can explore inside the human body, climb to the top of Adventure Tower, see a laser show in the planetarium, and more. Open every day. AdventureScienceCenter.org.
This is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 10 o'clock.
I thought